live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, amid the increase in cases globally, the Ulster County Department of Health is urging residents to get vaccinated against measles. There are no known cases identified in Ulster County, but we'll speak with the Ulster County Public Health Director, Eve Walter, about how to stay safe. Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here, as he is every Friday. He's got news about a job fair for those PepsiCo workers in Liberty who are losing their jobs when the plant closes this spring, and more. Plus, Clown Daddy brings silliness, songs, and puppets to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance this weekend, a Cut Flowers conference in the Hudson Valley, and all the March events at the Liberty Library. Coming up, but first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported a modest uptick in hiring last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average was essentially flat in early trading.
U.S. employers added 151,000 jobs in February, slightly more than the month before. Job gains were tallied in healthcare, construction, and manufacturing. Bars and restaurants cut workers during the month, and so did the federal government. The unemployment rate inched up in February to 4.1%, even as the overall workforce shrank. Average wages last month were up 4% from a year ago, which is likely more than enough to outpace inflation. Wages have been climbing faster than prices for nearly 2 years now. That boosts workers' real buying power and helps to support consumer spending, which is the biggest driver of the U.S. economy. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
In remarks to reporters in the Oval Office yesterday, President Trump said he told his cabinet that they are in charge of staff reductions, not billionaire Elon Musk. NPR's Bobby Allen reports Trump seems to be reining in Musk's authority.
Since Trump took office, Musk has been exerting wide and unusual control over federal agencies. In his capacity as a special government employee in the White House, Musk has pushed the termination of thousands of federal workers and the near-total dissolution of some agencies. In his big speech to Congress this week, Trump praised Musk for doing it. But now Trump is telling his cabinet and other officials they are in charge of policy and firings, not Musk.
Elon has been really teaching everybody about the numbers that you can do. But what I want is I want the numbers, but I also want to keep the good people.
This follows lawmakers of both parties raising concerns about Musk's chainsaw approach. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
A new poll captures what Americans think about the dismantling of the U.S. Agency for International Development. The Trump administration has terminated more than 90% of the programs worth tens of billions of dollars. NPR's Gabrielle Emanuela reports the agency did everything from supporting local journalists in foreign countries to providing clean water in refugee camps.
A new poll from KFF, a health policy research and news organization, found 6 in 10 American adults think the cuts will lead to more humanitarian and health crises. And just under half of those surveyed expect funds to be redirected to domestic programs. Opinions varied sharply along party lines, with Democrats worrying about new global crises and Republicans focused on domestic programs. Gabriela Emanuel, NPR News.
Meanwhile, a federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to pay the money it owes to some global health groups. Their payments stopped when President Trump froze U.S. foreign aid. The judge says the Trump administration has until Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time to pay the groups. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. President Trump says he sent a letter this week to Iranian leaders. Trump says he told them he hopes Iran will be open to negotiating a deal to curb its nuclear program. In an interview on Fox Business News, Trump says if the U.S. has to go in militarily, it will be a terrible thing for them. Former President Barack Obama successfully negotiated a deal with Iran to rein in its nuclear program, but Trump withdrew it in his first administration, calling the pact horrible. California Governor Gavin Newsom, a possible White House contender, has made comments suggesting he does not support transgender female athletes playing on women's sports teams. Cap Radio's Laura Fitzgerald reports.
On the first episode of Newsom's new podcast, he spoke with conservative political activist Charlie Kirk.
But, like, would you do something like that? Would you say no men in female sports?
Well, I think it's an issue of fairness. I completely agree with you on that.
LGBTQ plus advocates and Democratic state lawmakers are strongly criticizing Newsom for the comments. Assemblymember Chris Ward of San Diego chairs the Legislative LGBTQ Caucus.
We were certainly caught off guard and woke up incredibly sickened and disgusted about seeing somebody who's been an ally of our community use this language.
A recent New York Times and Ipsos poll found 67% of Democrats nationally say transgender athletes should not be allowed to participate in women's sports. For NPR News, I'm Laura Fitzgerald in Sacramento.
The European railroad company Eurostar has canceled all its high-speed trains between London and Belgium today. Workers have found an unexploded World War II bomb. It's near the tracks just outside Paris. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Two people have now died in the growing measles outbreak in West Texas and New Mexico. New Mexico health officials on Thursday confirmed the death of an unvaccinated adult who tested positive for measles. The first death was a school-aged child in Gaines County, Texas, last week. Amid the increase in cases, Ulster County Department of Health is urging residents to get vaccinated against measles. No known cases have been identified in Ulster County, but Ulster County Public Health Director Eve Walter is urging caution. Dr. Walter joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today. And you mentioned that there's no current measles case in Ulster County, but given that the U.S. has already reported 164 cases so far this year, how does our situation compare to the national trends? And how concerned are you about the potential for outbreaks here in Ulster County and in our region?
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I mean, it's a highly contagious disease. So it's great that we don't have any. New York City did have two cases among, again, unvaccinated children. If it's not here, it's not here. If it comes here, it can spread quickly. And if, especially if there are communities that are unvaccinated, then herd immunity doesn't take place. And so it's not a problem until it is a problem. It can be a big problem.
Yeah. In your press release yesterday announcing this guidance to get vaccinated against measles, you mentioned that vaccination rates in Ulster County range from 57% to 100%. What factors do you believe are contributing to this wide gap, and what are you doing to address that?
So we only know what leads to vaccine hesitancy in general, and they're probably very common across all different vaccines. So the two biggest sources are lack of correct information about vaccines. People believe that they're unsafe when they are safe. So there's the educational piece and the knowledge piece. And then the second is access. There are some community members who have trouble accessing care, which is why we provide free vaccines here at Department of Health for people who are uninsured or underinsured.
The CDC reports that over 80% of measles cases are in individuals under 20, with many of these cases affecting children under 5. Why is it so critical for this younger age group to be vaccinated against measles?
Well, I mean, it's critical for everyone to be vaccinated against measles, and we typically recommend that they happen as early as possible. And for many kids, they can't go into the schools until they have been vaccinated. But also, you naturally, children are in groups. They play together. They're also, their immune system is much more fragile when they're young. Most illnesses tend to impact the very young and the very old the most. So both because of immune system and I think social life, there's a lot of reasons why children are more prone. School starts, cold season, you know, cold spread pretty quickly. This is a group of individuals in our community who like to play together.
Yeah. And for adults, what would you recommend? Can they still benefit from getting vaccinated?
Absolutely. They can. It's, you know, it's a little more challenging. It's much better to do it when you're younger, but absolutely you should. I mean, there's actually guidance that's going around that recommended of a second booster for people who are born, I think the years are like 1964 to 1967 only. But yeah, if you're an adult who's not vaccinated, you absolutely should get vaccinated.
And you mentioned that booster. I believe that regionally there was a case of measles a few years ago. Folks were advised to get a booster. Should they get a booster again or just consult with their healthcare professional?
I'd absolutely consult with your healthcare provider. It really depends on what years you're born, and I think your provider would want to think about other kinds of conditions that you're experiencing at the time. So, yeah, definitely talk to your provider.
What advice do you have for anybody who's traveling to regions perhaps with active outbreaks, both domestically and even internationally?
Yeah, I would say avoid them if you or your children are not vaccinated. We see the numbers in Texas are increasing every single day. More and more communities, more and more states are being impacted. The numbers grow every week. If you're not vaccinated, your children are not vaccinated, and you go to these communities, this is a highly contagious disease. So you're putting your children at risk.
And just so folks understand, you know, what this looks like, if somebody suspects they've been exposed to measles or showing some sort of symptoms, what steps should they take?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. I would strongly suggest, given how contagious this is, that you do want to get care, but call the place first. Call your primary care provider, or if you're going to go to emergency one, and call them first and tell them that you're planning on coming in so that they can take the necessary precautions of keeping your child or whomever you're concerned about separate from other people. So, yes, absolutely reach out to your provider to get care, but please tell them before you show up.
And for folks who might have questions, can they contact your department? And there's also a state database, I think?
Yeah, absolutely contact our department. Our phone number is 845-340-3070. This will bring you to our group of public health nurses. If people are not vaccinated, if you have no insurance or you're underinsured, you can talk to our nurses about measles and other vaccines. And if you do have insurance, certainly reach out to your healthcare provider.
That's Ulster County Public Health Director Dr. Eve Walter urging caution as measles continues to outbreak. There's an outbreak in the United States and urging folks to get vaccinated. Dr. Walter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's turn now to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday. Good morning.
Good morning.
And just to confirm, there are no known cases in Ulster County, as Dr. Walter mentioned, no known cases in Sullivan County either.
No.
All right. And let's talk about what's going on with the legislature. Met yesterday. Also want to make sure we talk about the Sullivan County Center for Workforce Development and what they're doing to help those PepsiCo workers who are being laid off at that plant in Liberty as it closes. There's a job fair coming up.
Yes, coming up later this month, I believe. Let me just
March 28th.
Yeah, March 28th. There we go. I got it in front of me. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the actual plant at PepsiCo on Mill Street in Liberty. And we are looking for businesses to showcase opportunities that they may have to these folks. So if you're interested as a business in having a table there, there's only 40 available. You can register now by contacting either Samantha Neitzel or Tamika Harris at our Center for Workforce Development, which is 794-3340, I believe. They will be very happy to take your information, but do it sooner rather than later. Of course, I'm just pleased to be able to relate that we are doing something to help these folks out. We have consistently scored in the top five for job growth rate for the past 3 years out of every county in Sullivan County, in New York State. Yeah. And we have often been number one. There are jobs available there. So we want to make sure that we keep as many people here in the county as possible, that they don't feel like they need to leave the county to go find other employment.
Yeah, and we have talked about this before, this closure of the plant affecting about 300 workers and talking about the impact that it would have locally. So good to see that the Center for Workforce Development is working proactively to help some of those folks. The legislature yesterday passed a resolution regarding the prison strike, the correctional officers who are striking. What is that resolution? How does it intersect with what's going on with this statewide strike?
Well, actually, in 2024, after the closure of the Sullivan Correctional Facility, which is different from the Sullivan County Jail.
Yes.
Sullivan Correctional was a maximum security state prison over in Fallsburg, right next door to the Woodburn Correctional, which does stay open. Sullivan has since closed, but we have had long had a need for more corrections officers in the Sullivan County Jail, which is located in Monticello. In fact, legislators had last year to create a double overtime payment for our correction officers who just were consistently getting mandated into overtime because we didn't have enough folks to follow state regulations in the number of personnel we had to have at the jail. So after Sullivan closed, we created this, the legislature created this resolution where it would be upon consideration of a potential employee's training experience, the sheriff and the county would determine the amount of years of experience to be credited to any state corrections officer who wanted to come work for us. And then that employee would start at the base salary that corresponded with the years credited, based, of course, on our union agreements that we have in place, too. So that, however, only applied to officers who had worked at Sullivan Correctional. So we wanted to expand it beyond that since, of course, officers have now been striking. I think quite a few have lost their jobs and health insurance. And not just at Woodburn, but we have Sullivan County folks who also work at like Eastern over in Napanock. And I think there's other locations as well that some locals commute to. So the legislature passed it yesterday in an emergency meeting to say, listen, we will make this offer to any of you. Last I heard, we have about 50 applicants for about half those number of jobs, 25 mm-hmm. jobs. So it's been a great turnout. After Sullivan closed, we didn't really get much of any applications because at that time, the state, while we might be able to match the salary, the state had slightly better benefits. But with all the what's the word that I'm looking for? All the unsettled situations going on right now with the officers and legislators being very cognizant of and sensitive to their concerns, they said, listen, we might be able to solve an issue for you where you can come work for us, and we get enough people now at the jail where we won't have to do mandated overtime on any kind of regular routine basis, but more like what it was meant to be. If you want to do overtime or if we need you just in case, but not on a daily or weekly basis.
It sounds like that might be working out for some of those corrections officers, might be working out for the county as well.
Yes.
After the legislative meeting, though, just to update folks, according to the New York Times, corrections officers who staged these unauthorized strikes the last 2.5 weeks were given an ultimatum last night. Return to work on Friday today or face termination, disciplinary action, and the possibility of criminal charges. The state's saying in exchange for officers returning to work, the state would place a 90-day pause in some provisions of the HALT Act, which limits the use of solitary confinement for inmates. And that was a part of a news conference from the Department of Corrections last night. So remains to be seen how that impacts the continuing strike. And then, you know, maybe there are more people who might want to take you up on that offer.
We have work waiting for them. And even if they don't want to necessarily work in the county jail, maybe in the sheriff's office, maybe somewhere else in county government, our Center for Workforce Development, the same folks that are dealing with the PepsiCo situation, stand ready to assist them as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. Let's talk about the Executive Committee and the Sullivan County Visitors Association. They're discussing where the grant program for SCVA lives. Is that right?
The SCVA already has a grant program, $1 million that they were given last year, or maybe actually the year before, the Visitors Association to help promote tourism further. And of course, they get quite a bit of the majority of the bed tax money, taxes that are paid by visitors who rent lodging establishments, whether it's hotels, motels, Airbnbs, Resorts World, whatever. So we have been collecting record amounts of that, and most of that already gets passed on to the Visitors Association, but the legislature has wanted to enhance tourism more. So they gave $1 million of about $2.2 or $2.5 million that we had just sitting in the bank to the Visitors Association to dole out. They reserved the other $1.2-1.5 million for an in-house program, the Tourism Enhancement Grant Program that they had been looking at for good year or more now. However, at the meeting yesterday, there's now talk of maybe instead of having that all be something done in-house with the attendant paperwork and complications with that and everything, just handing the rest of that over to the Visitors Association, specifically for large-scale events where you have something sort of like level of the Bagel Festival, where you're getting thousands of people coming in. Although there's also talk about also creating a tiered level where maybe some of the smaller scale events as well. So this is a fluid situation. It's in discussion right now, but now it seems to have switched from an in-house to maybe focus more on doing it with the SCBA.
So meaning that like organizers of the Bagel Festival could apply for a grant to help produce it. Yes. On. Right. Mm-hmm. Any update on SCBA's search for a new president? Did that come up at all?
Last I heard that they are continuing the search. They've got several candidates that they have begun interviewing. And hopefully in a couple months here, they will be able to announce. But that's more their business than mine. I know that Roberta, the CEO president, has technically retired, but I'm sure she's going to remain in at least a consulting capacity with the Visitors Association. And her husband, Herb, remains the vice president.
Legislators took a tour this week of the Center for Discovery's Children's Specialty Hospital in Rock Hill. Tell us about that. That's that building off 17 that used to be, was it
Frontier Insurance? Yep.
And they, over the years, have converted that now into a specialty hospital. Talk a little bit about that tour.
Yeah, I went with them on it, took some photos, was just as impressed and amazed as they were with this facility. We're very proud to have it in Sullivan County. It is a, just like everything with the Center for Discovery, a world-class campus, and it's a very unique purpose that it does. It's a children's specialty hospital, not a children's hospital. It's a children's specialty hospital for those dealing with autism, with developmental disabilities where they're very medically fragile. So it's a hospital insofar as it actually has an emergency room entrance, or not emergency room, excuse me, emergency entrance and an exit into a hospital area, but it's not open to the general public. Deals with children from, I think, birth right up into their teenage years. And then after that, the center can transition them into some of their adult programs that they have. But it is a repurposing of a building that was still in great shape, otherwise would have deteriorated, was meant for some sort of office use, but also was converted into a medical use. It is got, I think, a couple of floors still that are being fitted out. They told us that by the end of 2026, they plan on hiring an additional 200 people. These will be specialty jobs, very good paying jobs. So hopefully they will also choose to become Sullivan County residents, or at least close by. And what they're doing in children's lives is just absolutely incredible. There were several points where I think there were tears in the eyes of legislators to see these children who would not be able to thrive anywhere else, but are in an environment where they can thrive and are being taken care of by some just people full of limitless compassion and care. It was wonderful to see. Take a look at the photos. We posted them to social media. You will see this is just a really special place.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, including a date to mark on your calendar, the burn ban for New York State. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is iconic alt-country musician Nico Case. The founding member of the indie rock band The New Pornographers is out with a memoir. It's called The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You. She'll talk about it with Hanif Abdurraqib. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Grizzly Bagels, small batch handmade New York style bagels in Roscoe, New York, grizzlybagels.com, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno and joined by Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Well, you know it's spring when you have to spring forward this Sunday at 2, and also when we have to note when the burn ban goes into effect in New York State. That's coming up.
Yes. Our fire coordinator, Deputy Public Safety Commissioner John Hauschild, told legislators yesterday Listen, there's two important dates coming up. One, of course, we probably all know about the Spring Forward Sunday morning, but one of the great things to do with that is to change the batteries in your smoke alarms or carbon monoxide alarms. And if you have non-removable batteries, just to maybe do a test to make sure that that alarm is still working as it should, because too many people let them go, and then suddenly when they need them to work, they aren't working because they haven't been checked. And then secondly, speaking of fires, this is more about wildfires. March 16th, the burn ban begins statewide. However, our Bureau of Fire is already advocating for people not to burn outdoors. Listen, it pollutes anyway. It's just not a wise idea, especially, John was saying, in the southern part of the county. It's actually rather dry down in the Lumberland Highland areas.
Still some drought conditions.
And, of course, on top of that is the fact that vegetation has not started really coming back for spring yet, so vegetation is naturally dry.
Yeah.
So this is a time not to be doing outdoor burning.
That's March 16th and goes through mid-May.
Usually goes through mid-May.
Yeah, and so, again, that is just something we really should all adhere to, especially when we see the devastation that wildfires have. We've seen what happened in California, and we know that we've been in drought conditions here. Don't let that snowpack fool you.
No.
It's important. And also, again, as we spring forward this Sunday, change the batteries in your smoke alarms. Good point there. Want to mention also that public safety is getting some funding from the state for some EMS recruitment and education.
Yes, and I found out actually it's even more than that. It is the Max Award that the Department of Health gives. I can't remember the actual name of the grant, but it's $500,000, $500,000, which our grants and public safety folks should be awful proud of, because as Alex Rao, our 911 coordinator, EMS coordinator, and another deputy public safety commissioner told me yesterday, it's the hardest grant he ever had to apply for. He was thrilled that we got the money. The award will go toward bolstering EMS education, and specifically with EMTs, people who will be able to pay for their training to become emergency medical technicians, sort of like our Center for Workforce Development has been doing with electrical trades and welders and things like that. We'll be able to do this for EMTs as well. We'll have recruitment and retention initiatives where right now, for example, there's Join Sullivan Fire, which is geared towards the firefighters. Well, there's an effort now with this money to start up a similar one for, I don't know that it'll be called this, but sort of like Join Sullivan EMS. We'll also aim to standardize the level of care across EMS agencies so that everyone is providing the basic life support BLS service that is at the same level. There isn't a difference between ambulance corps on that. And finally, also adding additional EMS resources during our peak summer season. And that will be interesting to see, because we already are struggling with Alex put it in his report that on mutual aid calls where we need, for example, our fly car has made it to a location, but now we need somebody to transport them. Sometimes we're going five corps deep to get a responding ambulance, meaning that four other corps couldn't provide the necessary manpower to bring an ambulance to transport, and we had to go to a fifth one. That's just not something sustainable. It's not something that we're going to accept. And so this money is very timely, and it's going to be well used towards that effort as well. We need to bolster those ranks.
Red Cross Month is this month, March. You honored some Red Cross volunteers yesterday.
This is always a nice thing to see, and you'll see it if you watch the video. I'll also be posting a photo today of the folks who came. The executive director of our chapter, which is based in Binghamton, the Southern Tier chapter of the Red Cross, came, but he also came with four people, two of whom I've known a long time and have been, one of whom I think has been a volunteer for as long as I can remember, over 30 years. But these are the people who will show up at your door after you've suffered some horrible catastrophe, fire, flood, something that just has been devastating to you. And they will be saying to you, I'm here to help. What can I do?
And also want to mention an event coming up next week at the Sullivan County Museum. The world record holding.
Easy for you to
say that often. World record holding mountain climber. Mm-hmm. Vern Tejas?
I think it's Teja. It's T-J-A-S, but Tejas is how I'd pronounce it too, but I'm not exactly sure. He is known for the first solo winter ascent of Mount Denali, also known as Mount McKinley up in Alaska, the first solo of Mount Vincent, which is the highest peak on the continent of Antarctica, the first winter ascent of Mount Logan, which is Canada's highest, and lead guide for the first ascent of another mountain in remote Antarctica. And it turns out that he had gone on top of Mount Denali / McKinley with some intent several years ago to see if our local explorer, Dr. Frederick Cook, born in Hortonville, and he has a society in his name at our County Museum in Hurleyville, had really made it up to the top of Mount Denali / McKinley, because that's always been a matter of controversy. And one of the things that Cook said is it's a mountain made of granite. And Vern went up there a few years back and confirmed, brought back granite with him. He had actually given it to the Cook Society. They had put it in a cabinet. It had been forgotten about. Somebody found it the other day and found out what it was and who it was from and said, hey, let's ask Vern if he'd like to come speak at the County Museum. Guess what? He is coming. And he will be there on Thursday, March 13th at 1 o'clock to talk about his extraordinary career. And I'm sure weave in some things about our own homegrown explorer, Dr. Cook.
And I'm going to be talking to Vern next Wednesday.
I was hoping
and
you
I
would.
I promise I will find out how to pronounce his last name before then. And tell the Frederick Cook Society to check all their drawers and cabinets.
Yes!
quick reminder before we go about Move Sullivan Route E now running.
Yep, just a reminder that we have a new route running for Move Sullivan. We need to start getting some people on that bus to do it. Of course, it's just been its first week. But it runs from Liberty up through Parksville, Livingston Manor, Roscoe, down to Calicoon Center, Jeffersonville, over to Youngsville, White Silver Springs, and back to Liberty. It's a two-hour run, 5 days a week.
All right. Thanks. Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government joins us every Friday. We'll see you next week. Have a good weekend.
You too.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, Clown Daddy. That's next on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mimi Bradley, Radio Catskills Development Manager, reminding you that a great way to keep public radio here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania is by becoming a Sound Supporter. Sound Supporters give small amounts, $20, $30, $50 a month or more, that add up to a big help. Plus, Sound Supporters get special thank yous, like drawings for tickets to events in our community throughout the year. Become a Sound Supporter. Go to wjffradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance's next installment of its Salon Series is tomorrow and features Clown Daddy. Clown Daddy, also known as Ellie J, is a talented actress turned clown known for her physical comedy and puppetry, often blending vaudevillian slapstick, deep emotions, and a touch of metaphysical humor. Tell us about what inspired your transition from acting to clowning. What does clowning offer you that acting didn't?
Well, so I was one of the many that went to NYU. I went to New York because it was New York or bust ever since I was a kid. And so I went to NYU and studied through Atlantic Theater Company, which was a great, great education. It was great training. But I noticed how heady the tendency for American actors tend to be very intellectual. So they know what the characters want and they know what the story is, but when it comes to actually physicalizing the characters, the training would always fall short. So ironically, when I was talking about how I wanted to like embody the character and I wanted to figure out how to really like step into the character's shoes in my body, the training was pretty subpar, even in the city. And so that was when my professors at NYU were like, have you heard of the Lecoq School in Paris? And for those who are not theater nerds, Look, the Lecoq School in Paris, I refer to it as clowning school because that's easier, but it's really dynamics of movement. So it's like, how do you study everything that moves? And everything does move, even if it seems static. So that was like the Hogwarts for the actor, where you would go and just learn how to really embody images, animals, colors, all the elements and things like that. So that was, I would say, shorthand, clowning is the more magical, get it in your body and make people laugh, than what I've noticed is standing stock still and being like, I'm acting. And I was sick of that world.
Well, your training in New York and Paris especially is fascinating. And that must have just like supercharged that approach to performance and especially physical comedy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I also, you know, it's my heroes are Jim Carrey, Robin Williams, Lucille Ball, even, you know, she's film. And so it's more so her facial expressions, but she's absolutely a clown. Glenn Close, unexpectedly, is a very clowny person. And so all of these incredible actors, the ones that attract us the most, whether we can put it into words or not, are the ones that are physically present. And I really like that. And I like being that.
Your show, The Guest, you're preparing for a very special arrival. Mm-hmm. It's a show for all ages. How do you balance making that physical comedy and the show enjoyable for kids and adults?
Well, usually, I mean, I kind of follow, like, have you seen Shrek?
Yes.
I follow the Shrek outline where they're, you know, you can watch Shrek, like the kids and their parents can watch Shrek. And there's jokes for everyone across the board. And Shrek did a really good job of putting in certain jokes and quips that the adults find hilarious, but it just goes over the kids' head and, you know, they're not going to notice and it's not vulgar in any sense. So the biggest thing for me is just making sure that, like, I don't swear. And that it really is it, because clowning is such a universal thing that it's not too difficult for me to be like, okay, remember in this show, we're not going to pull a banana out of our pants, and be vulgar about it. and we're not going to swear. So it's pretty easy.
You, have said, that you want to be less serious and more sincere. How does that philosophy shape your humor and your work?
Well, sincerity is something that, when I don't even remember where I heard that quote, but it really rocked my world, because sincerity, oh, Alan Watts, there you go. sincerity is something that I'm not sure the modern mind often thinks about. And sincerity is, I mean, it's something that is on a deeper level of emotional connection. And so when people are like, all right, gotta be serious. Serious is way less fun. It's really hard to be fun and serious at the same time, even though I ironically take my clowning very seriously because I want to make sure that I have the skills to be able to do what I want and make people laugh. But then once I collect the technique, then it's about going, okay, now that I have this bit, say Dancing with the Coat Rack, which people will see in The Guest, now that I know how to do that, how do I enjoy it legitimately instead of pretending that I enjoy it? And I think a lot of the modern world has this tendency to pretend a lot, but not actually feel that emotion that they're pretending, whether it's seriousness or whether it's enjoyment or excitement or sadness even. So sincerity is really important, because that's how we remind each other that we're all human and we all feel the same things and it's okay.
What's next for you after The Guest? Any new projects or performances you're working on?
Yeah, well, I'm currently in the last stages of completing a coaching course that I've been taking for the last 6 months. And that has been really, really fun because I love teaching. And so I'm really, after this show, I'm really going to work on getting workshops together in the, you know, Calicoon area and beyond. A lot of my movements are also in Mountaindale area. So, you know, Sullivan County. I'm going to be holding workshops for multiple groups, ages, things like that. And I also am going to start doing one-on-one coaching for clowning, not just as a performance. I'm not going to be teaching necessarily people who want to be a stage clown like myself. I will for sure. But more so teaching clowning on a core level where it's like, hey, when life starts to get you down, you can always invoke your clown and your clown is always there and can always help you out and can always help you get out of a spot and chemical shift yourself into a place of frivolity and enjoyment, because at the end of the day, life is supposed to be enjoyed. So I'm going to start teaching a lot more.
Good advice for all of us. That's Clown Daddy, who will be in performance with The Guest tomorrow at the Krauss Recital Hall at the DVAA in Narrowsburg at 2. It's free entry and features silliness, songs, and puppets. Clown Daddy.
Woo-hoo!
More information at clowndaddypresents.com and also more information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the first ever Hudson Valley Cut Flower Conference. We'll learn all about it next. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, we've all heard of Tyrannosaurus rex, but consider the humble Ginkgo biloba.
To a paleobotanist, that plant might give you so much context.
Plus, butterfly species across the country are declining.
Because people love butterflies, we're able to get a more complete picture about what's going on with butterflies compared to many, many other insect groups.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The cut flower industry is a rapidly growing sector of agriculture driven by the increasing demand for sustainably grown, locally sourced flowers. Across the Hudson Valley, more farmers are embracing sustainable and regenerative practices, offering seasonal, locally grown blooms as an alternative to imported flowers. That demand has led to the first ever Hudson Valley Cut Flower Conference, set to take place on Tuesday, March 11th at Cornell Arts Center in Kingston. Juliana Ashakova is the Agriculture Economic Development Specialist at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Ulster County, who's helping put that on. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about the Cut Flower Conference and what it aims to achieve.
Sure. My pleasure. So this is the first event that is organized together by the whole CC program working team. We have like more than 50 educators working together on the state level, and we see the tremendous interest in cut flower growing, and we realize that there are a lot of flower growers in Hudson Valley. So this is our attempt basically to respond to this interest and to provide educational sessions that will be held by our CC educators and experienced farmer flower growers. So this is an opportunity for local growers to network, to collaborate, to educate themselves, and to be in touch with each everyone, because we have a big network of growers in our area.
And this attempt apparently is a very good attempt, because the in-person event has reached full capacity. You're sold out, but now you're offering a virtual attendance option for folks. Tell us about this virtual attendance options for the folks who can't make it in person, because, well, you've sold out. You're being successful with this first ever conference.
Yeah, we are very happy and grateful for everyone who registered and for those who were trying. And yeah, we were like, couldn't, you know, fit everyone in. So that was our attempt to provide an alternative when folks will still be able to listen to the educational sessions. They will have full access to the session. They will also be later followed up with all the resources that will be provided during the sessions. And they will be able to receive all those insights that we will be discussing during the conference. So for anyone who is interested, we are offering a virtual attendance. It's only $25, and they will be able to spend a whole day with us online via Zoom. So this is our kind of a way to still have more people to register and to be able to join us virtually.
And this is for new and experienced growers. How do you see this conference helping local flower growers adapt to this increase in demand and then also some of the challenges that are out there, including climate change?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So first of all, this is for all level flower growers, because what we were aiming to do, first of all, is to share education and share those experienced knowledge by farmers who are doing them, who are doing flower growing for many years, so then they can, you know, be around their own community. And we are trying just to help them to build this community and to network and, of course, provide as many educational resources as possible. And I feel that everyone will find something interesting for them, either it's educational part or networking. And it's just the beginning, because we see that this industry, this niche, will be developing, and we are doing our best to fulfill those interests in educational needs, and we'll be, you know, doing more in the future. This is our like first time attempt, just to see what's like how it's gonna go and what will be the feedback and how we can improve and do more things for the future as well.
And do you have some other programs that are coming up for folks interested in flower growing or other agriculture?
Sure. Yeah. So currently we're also hosting like a monthly free webinar workshops that are dedicated to cut flower topics, starting from like business planning and marketing to soil health and like IPM, like different topics each month. So yeah, folks can register for those. And we are also hosting a few other events for local agriculture folks. It's a garden day. It's more for like gardeners who are, you know, not like professional farmers, but they are interested in learning how to grow something by themselves. That's coming in April, it's going to be, as well as we have a Master Gardener like lecture series, it's also more for like hobby growers. And those are like some events that are coming in soon for those who are interested. They can also visit our website, olsted.cc.cornell.edu, and follow the agriculture events, and they will find even more offers.
And they can also get registered virtually for the virtual conference, for the Cutflower conference there?
Yes, of course, yep.
All right, that's Ileana Ashikova, the Agriculture Economic Development Specialist at Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ulster County. We're talking about the Hudson Valley Cutflower Conference coming up Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and have a good day.
You too. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Tracy Gates is here from the Liberty Library to tell us all about the events coming up there this March. This is Radio Chatskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, we called out Roy Wood Jr. for hosting a news quiz suspiciously like ours.
I have another show that I'm getting ready to host called Fortune of the Wheel.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week we ask actor Lauren Graham about where she stole the idea for the Gilmore Girls. Join us for the original news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Neuroscientist Ethan Cross says you may think it's healthy to vent about what's bothering you, but
the problem is you often leave that conversation feeling really good about the person you just communicated with, but all the negative feelings are still there. Sometimes they're even more activated.
Tools for managing our emotions. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Quilts, crafts, and Irish music are coming up at the Liberty Library in March. And here to tell us about it is Tracy Gates from the Liberty Library. Good morning.
Hi, Tim, and happy
Quilting Month.
I did not know it was National Quilting Month.
Red Cross Month, Quilting Month. Yeah, who knows History what other month. Months it
there's
might
be. There's yes, a lot happening. Exactly. So you guys are celebrating National Quilting Month with a quilt show.
Yes, we are. It's, oh my gosh. It's I've been working at the library for just about 2 years. And I guess I just never experienced the quilt show before. It was something that the Liberty Public Library had for, I think, for 20 years at the library, and up until they renovated in 2020, the library did. And then, of course, not a lot of people were going to the library for a while, but we brought it back. And we've got about, I'd say, maybe 24 quilts, like, hung up all around the Liberty Public Library. And they're, I need to say, they are crafted and quilted by the Calico Geese Quilters Guild. And they are just stunning. We've got really high ceilings, so you can really appreciate their beauty and their craftsmanship. So some of the names too are really wonderful. Tumbling Blocks by Peg Scribner. Night Hawk by Sally Abrams. This is one of my favorite names. Hawaiian Sweet Peas for Grandma. Such a great name and a great quilt by Lori Nathan. And this one is nice too. Snow Days in Hurleyville, very specific to our area, by Ginger McCarthy. So those are just a few.
The one that you have in your newsletter is beautiful. Calico Geese Quilting Guild was organized in 1986 here in Sullivan County, and they've been quilting ever since. Yes. My mom's a quilter, and
oh my gosh,
the quilting is it's a thing. These folks know their quilts,
yes,
and they know how to identify them and what kind of fabrics were used, what kind of machines were used, hand stitch, not stand. It's great.
Yeah, there's it's a combination of hand quilting, and also they use sewing machines too, but I feel like they're all handcrafted because they're all using their hands no matter what they're doing. And the quilt, I just did want to say, there is a quilt raffle, which, oh my gosh, I think everyone should come in and see this quilt, especially. It was crafted by many of the members of the Calico Geese Guild. And all you need to do is, like, to win it is just, you know, get a raffle ticket or a couple dozen. I mean, this is something that I think anyone would love to either have on their bed or display. It's just beautiful.
In addition to displaying these beautiful quilts, the Calico Geese Quilters Guild is offering a hand quilting workshop for beginners coming up later in March. These folks are going to show you how to do it, how to start. That's great.
Yeah. I was, when we first put up, or they came in with the quilts, I just thought, boy, it would be, I've used a sewing machine, but it's been a long time. And I do know how to sew a little bit. I thought, oh, it'd be so great to learn how to do this. And I started talking to two of the members there. And they're like, you know what? I think we could really show people how to do this. So on Saturday, March 22nd, we have a hand quilting for beginners workshop at 1 p.m. There's still, I think, a few spots left, but there is a wait list. So, and they're going to show total beginners like myself. Just, they're going to show us some of the, you know, sewing, the stitches used, and also provide all the materials. So I think some people will come and probably get the bug to start quilting.
Yeah, and you're not expected to have a full quilt done by the end of the workshop. they're giving you a small piece of muslin.
Yes.
You'll learn how to thread, needle, follow a provided pattern, and then bring home that piece. But that,
exactly,
Tracy, that could be the beginning of your quilting
journey. Or yours, Tim.
Maybe. I know. There's other stuff going on at the library as well. Of course, we have to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. You've got live Irish music coming up.
Yeah, we could all use some cheer about this time of year. Back by popular demand, because last year we had Tom Gardner of the Hooley Shooters, and he came up with his guitar. He's a singer and songwriter. He played everything from Fiddler's Green to Galway Girl to Finnegan's Wake. But this time he's bringing along a fiddler, Carol Sherrar, who's an incredibly accomplished violinist as well. But she's coming with her fiddle, so there's going to be two people this time. And last time it was just people just loved it because there's a sing-along element as well. And he's a great entertainer. So that again, last year we kind of said, you know, anyone can come. And really anyone can come. It is free, but we are encouraging people to sign up on our website or stop by the library or call the library and just say, hey, want to come? Just so we know how many seats to put out. But we had standing room capacity last time, and it was just, I just loved it. It was so much fun. And wear some green.
Yeah. Some ongoing programs. The Writing Life Memoir Writing Workshop continues. That's going on. Alchemy Poets, the poetry group, is coming up with a monthly meeting.
Yes, that's in 2 weeks, Thursday the 20th at 1 p.m. They meet monthly. There's one that you don't have to sign up for, but bring your poetry, read, get some constructive and positive feedback. It's a very supportive. All of our writing workshops are incredibly supportive. In fact, I just had Writing Life yesterday, and that meets monthly, and people hung around for like a half an hour afterwards, just chatting and sharing their tips on what they're writing and so forth.
Always some great children's events and resources. And one of the resources we want to point out is a new bilingual early literacy computer. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, we do have two early literacy computers in our children's area. There's lots of programs and basically games, but learning games that they can, math and reading and STEM, all sorts of things that kids are learning, but doing it in a really fun way. And I have to say, I feel like whenever I'm there, there's always kids on those computers. And we just got a new one. So what's nice is that there's two of them, and they have different games. So they used to be the same, and now they have just the newer one, just maybe it's a little brighter, a little bit more colorful, but it also has different games too. So those are really popular, and it kind of make learning fun. So it's great to have them there.
And as it gets warmer outside, folks might want to be out and go for a hike. You guys offer, in cooperation with Sullivan ONW Rail Trail Alliance and the whole Sullivan Public Library Alliance, you can borrow a day pack. Like you can borrow the stuff that you might need. It's got a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, we have it on display. So I encourage people to come. It's a really nice Osprey. I actually have an old Osprey at home. I'm like, can I switch this out? But not only that, I mean, it's got like everything. I shouldn't say everything, but it's got a lot of
binoculars, sunscreen, exactly. A flashlight, a hiking journal, more information, resources,
first aid kit. Exactly.
That's all great.
No, it is good. And it just makes you feel better when you're out taking a hike, you know, that you've got those things. And I think, you know, it gives you a sense of like, okay, if you want to make that investment down the road, you know the things that you ought to have. But it also makes it possible for people to go out, and if they don't have these things or they don't have the trail pack, to get out there. And that's what we are really encouraging people to do, is to like enjoy this like beautiful place that we live in.
And before we go, I want to remind folks about your new Instagram account.
Right. It's been up for like a month or so now, but we're a little late to the Instagram game.
2025 is not that late.
But anyway, we're out there at Liberty Public Library. I think there are like dots, there's periods in between.
Yeah, Liberty.public.library.
Library. But look for us. I'm posting all the things that our calendar every month. And I think that we've got something going on pretty much every day this month. So check out Instagram, because I did post the calendar just a few days ago. And I'll try to put some pictures of the quilts as well. But come on down to the library. It's much better to see them in person.
Yeah, they're really amazing. And again, you have a high ceiling, so you're able to kind of show them up and show them off. And don't forget about the quilt raffle.
And the raffle, thank you. I was just about to say that as well, Tim.
Tracy Gates from Liberty Public Library, thanks for being here.
Happy March.
Happy March. Happy spring. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Reminder, you can hear this show and all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter. It hits your inboxes on Friday, so if you didn't get it, then it means you didn't sign up. Go sign up at our website now, wjffradio.org, and you'll get it next week. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union. and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week we've got two brilliant bread bakers and teachers, the authors of the King Arthur Baking Company's Big Book of Bread. We'll spend the hour with us answering every question on baking you can think of. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. A wind advisory is in effect for this afternoon till 4, wind gusts up to 40 miles an hour. We should see the snow showers taper off with some bright sunshine later at a high of 36. Clouds and 26 for a low tonight. Sun and a few clouds tomorrow with a high of 32, but some gusty winds hanging around, warming up to 40 on Sunday.